All right, so good afternoon, everybody. My name's James Bannon. Welcome to Data Center Track, DCI 410, where we're gonna take a bit of a deep dive into Windows to Go. Now, everyone knows what Windows to Go is, yes? You're right, yeah, nodding, excellent, that's what we like. For those of you who don't know, who haven't come across it, the very quick summary is that Windows to Go is a feature which came out in Windows 8, which allows you to deploy the Windows OS, so your enterprise SOE, to a bootable USB stick, not the type of $40 stick that you might get from Harvey Norman, but portable USB SSD. Effectively a portable hard disk. Plug that into any compatible laptop, desktop and so on, an internet cafe or someone else's machine, fire it up and it's a full OS running off that stick. So what we're gonna look at is exactly how we can do proper enterprise grade customization of that image and then get that image down onto multiple sticks at the same time. Now, I did this presentation in New Zealand a couple of weeks ago in Auckland, and it was the usual way. Started off with slides, then we did the demos, and because we're doing live deployments, the demos actually took a little bit too long. So my thought today was that unless you guys are sadists and masochists and you desperately want PowerPoint slides, does anyone really mind if I skip the slides and we go straight into the technical stuff? Someone at the back minds. Oh, that wasn't. That was, yes, we like it. All right, no problem. Is everyone else in agreement? Straight to the tech, bugger the slides. Oops, sorry, I didn't say that. Edit that bit out, please. All right, so which one do I want? I want number 3. All right, so flick it across. Now then, let me show you what I'm working with here. No, this is not a development, sir. Okay, so what I've got here is a USB 3 hub powered, because the idea behind this is that we want the ability to be able to deploy multiple sticks at once. There is a utility within Windows 8 that allows you to take an existing WIM and then to deploy that within the OS to a USB stick. But if we're doing this at an enterprise level, one at a time is no good. We don't want that. We want the ability to do multiples, okay? So these are the two that I'm going to, I will do the automated build to now, and then this one, slightly different. This is a W500. This is the device which we will go through step by step using PowerShell to do the deployment. On these ones, we will actually build Windows 10 onto that, okay? So, let's kill that. So, first up, I have a basic script. Well, it isn't exactly a basic script, it's 500 lines of PowerShell. But what we're gonna do is we're going to do a deployment out onto the sticks, but the point is that we want to be able to customize. When you use the utility within Windows to deploy an OS onto Windows to Go stick, you can't do any customization. So the image that you pump out looks exactly the same on every image. You then need to fire it up, log onto it, and do your name change, your domain join, all that stuff, okay? That's fine if you're doing it one at a time, but it's not enterprise. It's not what we like. Additionally, we want the ability to drop down multiples. Now we can do that in PowerShell fairly easy. The challenge is how do we do it in parallel? Because if you want to deploy out to 5, 6, 10 sticks, you don't want to have to wait until one is done, then it moves on to the next one, then the next one, then the next one, and so on. Okay, so the challenge behind this script, and I will go into the depth of how we actually put it all together, is to be able to take a look at each stick that you've got plugged into the host, extract the serial number, create a unique name based upon that serial number, do a unique unattend XML, a unique offline join, and then pump the image out onto every stick in parallel with full customization. Okay, that's what we're aiming for. And at the moment, the only way that you can do that is using PowerShell. So I've got my Create Windows to go. Now, you notice that the WIM I'm going to use here is actually the Windows 10 Technical Preview. Now, I'm going to whack in a nominated password for BitLocker. I'll enter in an administrative password, and away we go. So, what's occurring at the moment is if I fire up this again, now let's take a look. Whoop. Okay, you can see that those two sticks are going gangbusters. Okay, so the lights are flashing away. Come on, what's going on? Here we go. The lights are flashing away. So they're both being written to in parallel at this point in time. Okay, so it isn't one waiting and then the next one builds. It's a proper parallel build. Now, the way we do this within the script is by leveraging PowerShell jobs. So if I cut back to my PowerShell, he says, as it now doesn't want to, oh, come on, you're not serious. All right. Not in that session. All right. What we do have, and for some unknown reason, this session now does not want to respond. It's in edit mode. All right. For a plural site 1 month past, can someone tell me how to get out of edit mode? Press escape, see what that does. Nothing, unfortunately. That's okay. There's not a lot to see anyway. All it's going to do is at the moment, if I was attempting to just enter get job, and all it's going to do is show you two parallel PowerShell jobs running as background processes. Each of them are actually named with the unique computer name, which is extracted from the serial number from the stick, so that you know exactly which job was used to write to which stick. Okay. Now, behind the scenes, I've got a little deploy folder up here. Now, on the fly, these folders were built by that script, and each of them has been populated with an unattend file and then the temp blob file to do the offline join. Right, so we will come back to those in a little bit of time, because at the moment they're applying that image down. Because these sticks don't have inbuilt encryption, I'm going to BitLocker them as well. Okay, and then at the end of it, I'll be able to attach them to a Hyper-V VM and fire them up. So to see exactly what's occurring behind the scenes and how we made all this work, okay. And I've lost my trackpad. All right, this keeps getting better and better. Let's kill that. Here we go. Okay. See if I can get that back. So. Okay, can you guys see my mouse? Because I can't. All right, just bear with me, guys. My laptop has decided that it does not want to play nicely. I might be able to do something about that. Now, just so you know, in terms of what I was planning to give away in terms of swag, we've got a couple of Iron Key Windows to goes, a W500 and a W300. The W500 is the ruggedized unit. It's basically, it's shockproof, waterproof. You can run over it with your car and it'll still boot at the end of it all. The other one is a W300, which is not the ruggedized one. And I've also got a load of Pluralsight 30-day passes to give away. All right. Let's actually try doing this with keyboard, because at the moment I can't see any other way to get this done. No, it's not going to work at all. All right. We are going to cut over to this machine over here. Yay for having two machines. Let's sort this one out. All right. Apologies, guys. I don't know what's going on there, but we shall sort it out. We shall overcome. Now. All right, so this script was put together originally by Michael Nystrom. Michael Nystrom is a config manager and deployment MVP based out of Sweden. And at MMS 2013, he gave an excellent talk about real-life practicalities of Windows to go in the enterprise. Now, he put together a very, very good PowerShell script that allows you to do a deployment of the image with full customization. That's the one I made use of. However, that one doesn't allow you to pull out serial info from the hardware, and it doesn't allow you to do multiple builds in parallel. So myself and my colleague, David O'Brien, came up with extending the functionality. Now, I'm going to put this online after this conference is over, so be able to take a look at it. So there are a number of functions in there that I want to be able to show you. So I'm going to drop those into memory so that we've got those ready for a session. And I officially don't like this keyboard. Whew. One selected, fine. All right, so what are we going to do? Normally what we want is we're going to pull in a WIM file. Now, that's going to be my WIM file there. That's going to be my WIM file there. Have I got my mouse back? No, I don't. Now, normally I would then do a test, but I can't actually do a test, so it's not going to work. All right. Sorry, guys, just bear with me because this has derailed me in a way that I wasn't quite expecting. Okay. What I'm going to do is going to go down the extreme path, and we're going to kill that. just for the moment, guys, let me just flick back onto some slides while I recover from this horrendous demo fail. And irritatingly, it's not even the demo that's failed, it's my damn mouse. Who on earth has their mouse fail? That just sucks. All right, so what I want to show you, once we get the deployment back up and operational, obviously we're going to go through and we're going to do a deployment, we will do a build, but also want to show you the management, because a successful Windows to go deployment is not just how do you get the image down onto the device and with all the customizations that you're after. It's also about how do you create a very good end user experience. What you really don't want is for your users to get hold of this nice shiny device and it doesn't function in the same way that they would expect a standard enterprise SOE to behave. So we are going to cover the customization and the deployment. We're going to look at user provisioning and password sync onto the device itself. So you may have noticed I'm using IronKeys. The reason for that is that IronKey have a web front end, if you like, called IronKey Management Gateway that allows you as the administrator to talk directly to the encryption chip on the device, to drop the user's password onto that device and then have it sync policy against Exchange Active Sync. So if the user then leaves it on a bus, not that that would ever occur, but let's say that they did, that user can then log on to Outlook, onto Web Access, or the administrator can, and say, right, I want you to wipe it. And it will send that packet out and wipe it. Now, this is not functionality of the OS. Okay, this is you being able to talk directly to the device itself. So it's all about that end-to-end management. All right, let's just recover slightly from here because I've got my machine back. And not only have I got my machine back, my machine has a mouse. Isn't that just joyous? All right, let's get back in here. Now, with a bit of luck, that's about all you'll need to see for slides for a while. What do we think the chances are of that occurring? So, I have my script. I even have a mouse. Isn't that amazing? And let me just start. If you do a lot of PowerShell work, I strongly recommend that you investigate an add-on called ISE Steroids. This allows you to do a number of cool things, especially like see the variables as they get built. It does a lot of IntelliSense. It shows you where your code is maybe a little problematic. Okay, so you actually learn a heck of a lot about PowerShell simply from this, so I strongly recommend it. All right, so we'll see how we go with that build again in future. So what I'm going to do, we'll drop all these functions into our session and clear that. Now this time, I'm not going to use my Windows 10 WIM because I'm actually going to be deploying to a 500 that uses a product within there to talk to the encryption chip. And at the moment, I can't do that offline build of that product into Windows 10. Okay, that's just because of the DISM version. So we're going to drop that WIM file in there for Windows 8. Let's just check that it's there. It's not. Hang on. Yep. It would be because it's supposed to be C. Thank you for throwing that error. Yep, it's all good. So as you can see with the ISE steroids, as we build up our PowerShell environment, it shows us all those variables and what they are populated with, which is very useful. Now we're going to be doing a domain join, so we're going to need to pull in our AD PowerShell module, which should be fine. Just going to pull that through. Now this box is connected to my lab environment using the direct access. Has anyone implemented that in their environment? Show of hands, kind of few. Any of you looking at it? Yeah? It is a seriously impressive bit of kit, especially from a user perspective. A seamless machine-based VPN. They can log on. It doesn't matter where they are, as long as they have an internet connection and they are part of your corpnet. And I've integrated this very deeply into my environment, mostly because I want to be able to show you exactly what that looks like from a direct access perspective, sorry, from a Windows to Go perspective and from a management perspective. So I need a local password. So we'll prompt that, get that in there. We'll do the same password so that I can verify it. And I'll go through and validate that password. Now, I need a number of image variables. I could, of course, bake this into the image itself, but I want this to be a dynamic environment. I want the ability to say, okay, I'm going to do a deployment that's going to go out to somewhere in Australia, somewhere that's going to go out in New Zealand, different time zones. I want that flexibility. So I'll throw in my input locales. I'll throw in my organization name. I've got my image index, my domain name, where I want the machine object to go, what the GPO that I want to pull down actually is. In this case, I want it to have direct access, a time zone name, and whether or not I'm going to throw in any device drivers, any patches, where my staging folder is, if you like, and a few little bits and pieces which I use for IronKey. So I whack those variables in there and get them populated over to the left. Now what I want to do is go through and discover the disks that I'm going to deploy to. Now in this case, the one I'm going to deploy to is my W500. So I'll grab those disks. Now if I take a look, yep. Oh, okay, hang on. Not plugging in the USB hub is possibly asking a little bit too much of PowerShell. So let's try that one again. There we go. So that's my device down there. Now, a W500, which is one of these ruggedized ones, because it has a crypto chip in it, this poses a particular problem for me as a deployer, because I've got my public partition that I can talk to, and then I've got the secure encrypted partition. And at the moment, yes, my host can see it, but it isn't unlocked. So I need to use this partition first to be able to talk to and then unlock it at a later stage. So I've got my disks. Now, because normally I would do this in parallel, at a later stage in the script, I would do a for each. So I would enumerate all of the disks that I've got plugged in that meet those particular criteria, which are, it's got to be USB store path. Hang on, it's got to be a USB store path. It should not be boot, and the unique ID should look like, or should have that wildcard in there. And specifically, the operational status should be online. Okay, so as long as it meets that criteria, I'm good. I would normally do a for each and then pass that through to my main script. Now, I'm not going to do that here. So I need a single variable, in which case I will do. So that square bracket zero is saying that I want the object that is in the first position of the array, which is disks. So if I've got multiple ones attached and I do my get disk command, I'm going to get, hopefully, a number of them back. Now, if I'm going to do a for each, every time it's going to enumerate through that array and pick out the next one, the next one, the next one, but I can tell it to go directly to the one I want, Okay, so if you had an array, and I'll show you later exactly how that works. If you have a PowerShell array of multiple values, you can pick out whichever value you're particularly interested in working with, and either set that as another variable, or roll it through a loop. So I've got my disk. Now, because I'm going to be doing a build, and because this is a USB disk attached into a host, the only way that that host can write to the disk is via a letter, a drive letter. Okay. Now, what you don't want, and I've had this and it's painful, is when you're going to deploy out multiple sticks all at once, all of the partitions that you start to make and to format are starting to become contentious for a limited resource, and the resource being a drive letter. The host has the drive letters. All the USB sticks want a drive letter. However, if you allow them to just take whatever they want, then what you end up with is basically massive fails, red blood splashing all over the screen. Okay, it's nasty. So what we do instead is that we go through and we use a little function up here, which is get drive letters. Actually, let me just get zoom it working again. Do 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 do. All right. So we're going to go through and we're going to enumerate all of the device letters that are available on the host. So it's going to take a look and say, okay, well, you're using C, you're using D, you're using F. All the other ones are free. So I'm going to use those, and then we're going to make use of them later. And if I take a look at my drive letters over here, you can see that it's gone through and it's worked out which are the ones that are available. So I can use those and allocate those out to my USB builds. Now, as an example of what I was talking about with arrays, so if I do get type, you can see that that is an array. Okay, so if I, let's just enumerate it, the drive letters, so there they all are. So if I just want to pull out, say the first one, G, so I can do drive letters, square bracket, 0, and it's going to return the first one. So that's how you talk to a particular object within an array. Now that object in itself is actually almost like a subarray within itself, because it has two characters. It's got G and a colon. So let's just say I'm interested in the G, because I'm later going to pass that letter to a PowerShell commandlet that doesn't want G colon, it just wants G. So I've already referenced it as drive letters 0. I can do the same thing again and just pull out that G. If I wanted to get the colon, I could do 1. So it's the next one along in the array. So I've got my drive letters, and I'm ready to do some work. Now, I want to tell my script what type of device this actually is. So we're going to go through and we're going to check the unique ID on the disk. So I can tell it here, if I can go in unique ID, you can see down here it's got prod inkey public in there, so it should match disk unique ID like prod inkey public. So I'll go in there, and then if I enumerate device type, you can see it's 500. Okay, so it's jumped in and it knows exactly what I'm dealing with. If it was a 300, I'd treat it slightly differently, but as it is, it's a 500, so this is what I'm going to do. Now, first thing I want to do is I want to pull that serial out. The device serial is the unique serial number assigned to the stick itself. On iron keys, this is laser etched onto the device. So the serial is never going to change. So the advantage of this is that when you build an iron key for Windows to go, and you hand that over to a user, you know, they know exactly what the name of the OS is. And if they ever call up your support guys, you can literally ask them, hey, take a look on the device itself, tell me what the serial number is. Okay, so you always know. Now, the next thing I want to do is I want to pull out the drive letter that is allocated to the public petition, which in this case is that device letter, sorry. In this case is F. So I know that at the moment my public area is using F. And this is where I go through and I do some customization. So let me just actually get rid of these so we can see it being built as we go. Get rid of those. All right, so I want to allocate my computer name because I know the type and I know the serial number. So got my computer name and there it is right there, ready to go. I'm going to create a staging folder for that computer, and there it is. I'm going to skip over this bit. This is if I was going to be doing some direct application of IronKey settings onto the device. I've actually already done this, and I'll explain exactly what it is. So I'm now going to do something slightly tricky. What I'm interested in is the plug and play ID, the USB plug and play ID of the secure petition, because that's the one I want to actually build to. Yeah, obviously there's not much point in trying to whack a Windows OS onto a 1 gig fat petition. It's not going to go very far. Now I need to unlock that. I've got an admin tool, or I've got a command line tool that I'm going to use to unlock that. But the point is, how do I allow the script to tell when that disk has actually been unlocked? So what I'm going to do, what I do have, is I've got this variable here, which is PMP secure ID. Okay, now that string there, that string is common to both the public and the secure petition. And this little bit on the public is and zero, on the secure is and one. So I know how to reference it. So if I go over to this little bit of code over here, what I'm going to do is use a while command. This bit here, okay? So what I want is I'm going to do a get disk where object ID matches that secure plug and play ID, and where the operational status equals no media. Okay, because at the moment, if I check that out, and I can take a look at that. So if we go get disk operational status, that's it there. You can see down there, no media. So it's aware that there's a disk plugged in, it thinks there's no media. So there's not much I can do with that. So what I'll do is I'll get that while happening. And at the moment, it's just going to go through and say, not ready, not ready, not ready. There's not much I can do about that. So I will use my admin unlocker tool. And I will unlock the device. Now, in a fully automated environment, we would use a command line to get this done. That's gone through. Let's go back. Secure disk is ready. Okay. So using a PowerShell while, when you know that there's a particular a variable, there's a particular property that you can call on, and it has a particular state, it has a particular value, you can use while to keep checking for that for as long as that is actually so. And then once it changes, you can then say, right, move on, or take another action. All right, so we've got it unlocked, we've got it ready to go. And then we will redirect our disk. clear the disk, initialize the disk. Now, this is the bit where we're going to go through and take those letters, that array of letters that we built earlier on. And what we're going to do is we're going to say, okay, I need a system drive letter because I need a boot partition, and then I need a partition for the OS. So I need two letters. So for each of these, what I can do is I can go through and I can enumerate. I can look at my drive letters. I can take my drive index, which we set earlier on as having a value of 1. So in this case, 1 minus 1 is 0. And then 0 at the end of it. So if I do system drive letter there, you can see it's dead. And then I can do the same thing over here. And then I do one for the OS. And that evaluated to null for some unknown reason. Let's try that one again. Okay, no problem. So we'll go, just go through and enumerate that one more time, get those, build them up. Enumerate those. And then what we would do is we would increment our drive index from 1 to 3. So we'd add 2. So that the next time this script runs, remember, it's supposed to be running as a for each, the drive index is now 3. It's 2 higher. So the next 2 available letters in the array, they're the ones that are going to get used for the deployment. I'm going to go through, I'm going to create my unattend file, which is based upon all those variables which I imported earlier on, whack those in. And if we take a look in here, it's now been built, it's ready to go. This is where I would normally start that job as a sub-process, as my for each. I won't in this case. What I will do is just quickly go through, create my partitions, and format my volumes. All right, so that's all done. And then apply my image. Let me just clear that and apply my image. Okay, so now the next thing that I would like to show you is what this can look like from an end user experience. So we will get into the actual management. So if I go into my settings, so what I've got here is a virtual machine on Hyper-V, locally on here. When you have a Windows to Go stick that you want to test, a good way to do it is to create a VM without a hard drive, insert the disk, take it offline, and then attach that to the virtual machine, and then it'll be available in the dropdowns. So what I can then do is, let's connect you and start you up. So this is a experience that your user might get. Now, I'm firing off a W300, which does not have encryption inbuilt, so I want it BitLockered. And in we go. So if I can, yep, go through, connect. And we'll log on. Now from a speed of boot perspective, that's pretty much real time. So if we jump into the project, doesn't want to do it, come on. So we can see this is the one that's fired up. Here we go. So that's the one I'm fired up now. That's the one that's attached to the virtual machine. You can see that's one that's reading it. That's one that's reading. The other one, 500, that's one that's being built at the moment. All right. So this is my Windows to go user experience, okay? One of the reasons that Direct Access is such a critical component of it, and as you can see here, I've got my Direct Access connectivity and it's up and operational, is that I am now effectively on the CorpNet. So even though I'm firing up on a USB device, the operating system is a full proper enterprise OS. Okay, I am tunneled back into my CorpNet, and so if I want to do something like just see whether or not I'm connected to an internal resource, let's go ping one of my file servers, we can take a look, and yes it is, I'm online. Now the important thing to realize is that I do not have IPv6 in my environment. Direct access can be implemented without having to do IPv6 internally. The Direct Access server acts as an IPv6 translator, actually NATs between 6 and 4. It has a statically assigned IPv6 address, which it does itself. Your agents have a Direct Access, sorry, have an IPv6 address. Nothing else in your environment does. So that file server doesn't have an IPv6 address. That is the DA server itself doing all of that work. Now, why is this incredibly useful? Two reasons. Let's say you build a device on a host that doesn't lose the mouse and embarrass you at a tech ed. Then what you can do, if that has a Direct Access connection on it, you can actually hand that over to a user, or you can stick it in a Australia Post Express and you can ship it off to someone in a mine or wherever. And as long as they plug that into a computer that has internet access, they will be able to log in even though they have never logged into it before. So a limitation of Windows to go is that a lot of people, they deploy the image onto the stick, hand it over, and the user leaves. And they've never logged into it, so their username and password is not cached. So that stick is effectively, it's basically a bookmark, you know, or a doorstop, because they cannot log into it. With Direct Access, the tunnel occurs before the user logs on. It does not require the user to log on for the tunnel to be there. So when they log on, as long as they have an internet connection, there is a log on server available. Okay, so that is quite a powerful use case. You ship it out to somebody anywhere, down a mine, on a farm, wherever it is. Actually, you know, who remembers those ads for VB, not Visual Basic, Victoria Bitter? You remember those ones? Yeah, it occurred to me earlier on, Microsoft should do an ad for Direct Access based upon that VB ad. You know, like, you can get it down a mine, you can get it anywhere, I'm logging on now. One of those ones. But more importantly, let's look at it from a management perspective. So this is my config manager agent. Now I am completely external to my lab environment, okay? I'm not there, I don't have internet-based management. Reason being, I don't need it, because the config manager agent on this machine thinks it is on the intranet, because it actually is. It is on the intranet. I don't need to set up config manager IPv6 boundaries. I don't need to do anything along those lines. Reason why is because the machine is logged on, it's on AD, it knows what site it's supposed to be a part of, and it's on the intranet, it's ready to go. So what are the implications of this for management? So if we have a machine that's on the intranet and it's direct accessed in, we can do something within our environment, which is called manage out. Now, I don't have IPv6 in my environment, but if I put an IPv6 address on my config manager primary, then it can look up the IPv6A records in DNS, and it can tunnel back out using the Direct Access server. It knows how to get out. So this is my machine, which I'm currently tunneled in with. So I'm a config manager administrator. I'm sat at my desk. Someone calls up. They're down a mine. I don't know why I keep saying down a mine. It just sounds like a very unpleasant place to be. And they say, hey, I've got an issue. Are you tunneled in? Yes, I am. Can you please take a look at the serial number on your device? Yes, it is. It's 0230, et cetera, et cetera. No problem. Let's actually jump in and let's do a remote control. Now this is, given that everything else has failed me, let's see if this is going to work for me as well. Tell you what, I did not make my propitiations to the demo gods. Yeah, that's the one I'm going in on. Okay, I recorded this for Tech Ed New Zealand and it worked. Okay, so jump onto channel 9 and you can see it working because it does work. What I should be able to do, let me just take a look. If I go to, so ping W300021. Yeah. I figured that much out. Okay, 0219 3410. Sorry? 4-3. Yep, you're right, 4-3. All right. So I don't know why remote control has now failed for me just at the point where I wanted it to, but here we go. To the person walking out, it just started working. Never mind. All right, so there we go. I've got full remote control access into a machine, into a USB stick that is not on my corpnet. Now, from an end user experience, from a management user experience, from an admin user experience, that is about as rich as it gets. So at the moment, when people ask me about internet-based management for Config Manager, say, yes, we can absolutely do that. It is a management subset of what you can do with a native agent. Have you looked at direct access? Because that will give you absolutely everything that you want, fully secure, locked in, ready to go. So just to prove that it was actually this, I'll open it up, go into downloads. Yay, all good. Flick back onto my machine, and there it is. Okay, it's ready to go. Now, there's a few other things that I might want to put together. Actually, let's just see how we're going with our build. Is our image done? Yeah, it's still applying our image. That blows, but that's okay. Now, I'm just going to switch over to this other machine for a second, because what I want to show is, what's this one, number 7? Yeah, number 7. All right, so let's pretend. Sorry, I'm going to get another stick. So let's pretend that this has been built. It's all ready to go. And I hand this stick over to a user. Now, this is a W500. It has an encryption chip in it. So, as you know, I do want to be there. So what my user is going to do is, at the moment, yes, there's an operating system on it, it's fully customized, everything's set, ready to go, no problem. However, they can't log onto it. They don't have the admin code, okay? So they need to be able to personalize it for themselves. So what they're going to do is they're going to go through an enrollment process. In this case, they're going to fire in their AD credentials. And what's going to occur at the back end is that the device is going to talk to the configured management interface, which is then going to go and talk to Exchange ActiveSync. That is then going to verify that the username and password is actually what it's meant to be. It's then going to drop that username and password down as the user, the authorized user of this particular stick. Now, at this point, it becomes effectively managed. So it's worked that out. At the moment, so this isn't smoke and mirrors, as you can tell by the spectacular failure earlier on. This is all occurring in real time. So it is actually pulling that username and password down. And it's in there and it is done. It's now initialized. And I can take a look at what's occurring in my lab. Sorry, in my on my stick, I can see what preferences I want and what my info is. So just serial number, stuff along those lines. Now, let's say that I, my demo user, decides to go and leave this on the bus. Let's say I work for MI6 and I'm storing incredibly critical information and I leave it on tram because it seems that's what spy agencies do these days. So, because the device is talking to Exchange ActiveSync, it shows up as a managed device, as a mobile device. Okay, so if I've got my config manager environment hooked up to Exchange, I'm actually pulling all of that information in. What I can do as my user is say, hey, I have left it on a bus. Can you please go and wipe it? Now, I as the user can initiate this, or the administrator can obviously go and initiate this. So if I go into phone, it isn't really a phone, but it looks like one. And we can see I've got a couple of iron keys already in there. So they are synced against my account. So this is 6481. This is the one that I have. This is the one that I have left on there. So I'm going to say, please go and wipe that device. All right. So it's now in wipe pending mode. So if I cut back over, my device, I've locked the stick. Let's just go and log in. Let's see how fast this actually is. Oh dear, recommissioned. So the whole thing is reset to a factory default. It isn't initialized, it isn't managed, it's nothing. So this is completely independent of the operating system itself. Okay, so there are things we can do with Windows 8 management for remote wipe, not necessarily when you're looking at enterprise, but this is the end-to-end solution. So using IronKey, IronKey Gateway, Exchange ActiveSync, Direct Access, and PowerShell that allows you to get fully customized images out into your environment and fully manage from the device layer all the way up to the end user experience. Sorry. So the question was, if I didn't know the password to log on to it, would it be any good? So the reason why that message comes up is because I do know the password and I'm attempting to log on to it. If I didn't know the password to the device itself, it's kind of useless anyway. I can't log on. Okay, and even if somehow I did social engineering, I found out what that user's password actually was, I log onto it and it says, nah, sorry, it's all over. All right, so guys, thank you for bearing with me. We've got only a couple of minutes left. I am actually going to flick over and we're going to go all the way. Oh yeah. I just want to show you this one slide. So what it actually allows you to do, if your user forgets their password, because it's Exchange ActiveSync, they can reset the password on Exchange and that will actually sync back down onto the device. Obviously, we can do a wipe. If anyone attempts to tamper with it, or if someone attempts to log on, fail, log on, fail, log on, fail, if it's managed, you get a certain number of attempts at that and then forget it. It's all over. Now that's not just a reset, that is the device is Cactus. It no longer works. It's exactly the same if someone attempts to open it up and to tamper with the chip inside of it. It's absolutely not going to work. So we've done a bit on management. Now, evals. Things have changed fractionally. If you fill in your evals, you will instantly go into the draw to win either an Xbox One, a Nokia Lumia 930, or a Surface Pro 3. So please fill in your evals and be exceptionally generous to certain presenters who may have had their mouse die on them and the demos not go quite so well, but hey, it all came good in the end, right? Now then, we do have just a couple of minutes. Yeah, it was supposed to be a Q&A slide, but let's not worry too much about that. Look, we do have a couple of minutes if anyone wants to ask anything. There are some things. Yes, sir. How do you get the direct access client settings onto the image? That is actually part of the PowerShell build itself. So, let's go find it. So the bits that we are especially interested in, where are my settings? So this is part of when I do my offline join. Okay, so this is my domain join. I go through, I create a temp blob file. And I can drop down the policy names. I can drop down the policy names that I'm interested in. Okay, so when you set up the direct access in your environment, there are server policies and client policies that are available via GPO. So using the offline join, you can actually grab that down, and it becomes part of that temp blob.bin. So when you then go and apply it, policies are already there. Now, I'm really sorry that I couldn't show you the Windows 10 stuff, because I run through it about four or five times before now, and every time it's worked flawlessly, except when I actually need it to. And that actually shows you, so that is a full proper Windows 10 build. No one's ever logged onto it. The direct access stuff is working. User logs on instantly. Log on server is over the internet. Everything's good. So it's a really lovely user experience. Now then, one more question. Yep. Okay, why would you want to use something like Windows to go over something like WDS? So the main reason is where do you want your image to reside, and what use case would you have for it to reside in a different location? Now at the moment, WDS isn't going to allow you to deploy an image to one of those. Okay, it isn't going to work. But why would you want one of these? Well, let's say you engage me to come on site to do work. Now, you don't want to provide me with a laptop, you want me to bring my own, but you don't trust what I might have installed on it. Very wise of you, may I say. So what you do is you say, I will get my enterprise SOE, it's on this, plug this into your laptop, and you will be fine. We will manage you, okay? And you can do your work. Or let's say you've got some sales guys who are going to countries that maybe take a slightly a less than salubrious approach to corporate data. Time's up. You give them one of these, they get their laptop confiscated at the airport, they go, yep, no problem, run to the nearest store and plug this in, and they continue, away they go. Okay, so it is a different use case, absolutely. So guys, thank you. What I'm going to say is that I still do have some swag to give away. So look, first guys who come up here are going to get some swag, because that's the way it works. There you are, have a stick. There you are, have a stick. You can have plural site. There's a plural site. Get some course access into plural site.
Does the OOBE come up when you're using Windows to go if you don't have, if you're not already connected to wireless?
Sorry.
So if you've got wireless at home,
yep.
How's it going to work?
Okay, so when you go to the logon screen, you should be able to get some. You should be able to get to connect to the Wi-Fi. If you can't, for whatever reason, and it isn't there at all, then what you can do is actually fire it up on a VM and just do pass through, because it doesn't attempt to join you to a specific network at that point.